This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We've heard from one P-51 pilot, Lieutenant Colonel Bob Friend of the famed Tuskegee Airmen. Now we turn our attention to Jerry Yellen, who at the recent Spirit of 45 convention celebrated his 90th birthday aboard a historic ship in San Diego Harbor with the singing of Happy Birthday led by Bob Hope's granddaughter. Yellen was a P-51 pilot in the Pacific at the end of World War II, and he's a tremendous storyteller. He's the author of 4 books, and I think you'll find he tells a pretty captivating story with a microphone in front of him as well. Well, I'm sure you grew up always believing you'd celebrate your 90th birthday on a ship in San Diego with your uniform on and the DFC on your lapel and all these people here, right?
Oh, yeah, that was always my dream. I didn't think I'd make it past 20 during World War II.
Given where you are, I don't blame you.
Well, we were on Iwo Jima. It was pretty tough duty. We got there on March 7th, 1945, to strafe for the Marines. After they took the first airfield, we flew down from Saipan, and it was tough duty. There's 8 square miles of land, 90,000 soldiers fighting, 23,000 Japanese, 67,000 Marines. 28,000 were killed, nearly 7,000 Marines, and 22,000 Japanese. And 21,000 Marines were injured out of the 67,000. And there were more medals of honors won by the Marines on that battle than were won by all the Marines in every battle other than that in World War II. It was awesome.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have had the chance to do what you did from there without the work that they did. I want to get into your story from World War II, but real quickly, tell me why you are so passionate about this Spirit of 45 campaign. What are you hoping to accomplish?
The education of our children has to be changed. There has to be another greatest generation. I'm telling you my heart now. When I was growing up, the golden rule was do not do unto others what you would not have them do to you. And today the golden rule is those who have the gold rule. And we are not a nation of doers anymore. We're followers. We're not leaders. There must be 1 million jobs available for scientists and mathematicians and physicists in America today, and the educational system isn't providing them. They have to come from India and Taiwan and Japan, Korea, to fill the jobs that we have. So my wish for the Spirit of 45 is to reach out to all the young people in America to make our stories known of what made us the greatest generation. We served. 16 million of us served, 10% of the population. But the other 90% were at war also. We had an identifiable enemy. Japan was our enemy. Germany declared war on America. We never declared war on Germany, but that made the war, Germany and Japan. And after it was over, the leaders of America rebuilt Japan and rebuilt Germany so that we have allies of those who were formerly enemy. In 1988, my youngest son, a 4 son, married the daughter of a kamikaze pilot in Japan. And I have 3 Japanese grandchildren. They mean as much to me as my 3 American grandchildren.
Well, you got to give me the story, because I heard you when they were singing happy birthday to you and cutting your cake about when your son had proposed to his wife and she had to talk to her father, because her father was a Japanese fighter pilot in World War II, right?
Yes, he was a kamikaze pilot. He had 4 or 5 hours in a zero, and his whole class of classmates, were sent into the war as kamikaze pilots, but he and one other guy were sent to China, and he survived the war. In 1983, I was asked by the Mitsui Bank Group to go to Japan, talk about real estate in America. I was a consultant to the major banks in San Diego and San Francisco. And I didn't want to go in 1983. Japan was not a place I visit, and Japanese weren't human beings. They weren't people. But my wife wanted to go, so we went to Japan. And I immediately fell in love with the culture, the food, the people. So when we came back in 1983, we offered a homestay program to our youngest son, who was a senior in college. He graduated from college in 1984. Didn't know what he wanted to do, so he took a job teaching English for 1 year. Now it's 2014 and he hasn't come back yet. In 1987, we went to Japan and I met a young lady, and Robert said that he wanted to get married to her. And I saw the faces of the 16 guys that were killed that I knew in my squadron. And I wondered what they would think, but it was not my life. It was his life that was important. And I asked him, what does her father say? And he said, he won't meet me. And 7 months later, the father did meet my son. And he had full beard, bushy hair. And the father asked him just 5 questions. How old is your father? 63. Was he in the war? Yes. What did he do? He's a pilot. What did he fly? He said, P-51s. He said, where? Over Japan. And he went home, said to his wife, make the wedding. And she said, why? We hate them. And he said, any man that could fly a P-51 against the Japanese and live must be a brave man. And I want the blood of that man to flow through the veins of our grandchildren. So I have 3 grandchildren in Japan. And we went there in September of 2012 to talk to them as adults. My oldest grandson's name is Kentaro. We call him Ken. And he has a job. He just graduated from the Hokkaido University, which is the technical school similar to MIT, as a physicist with a master's degree in physics, and was one of 20,000 applicants for 100 jobs. And he got one of the 100 jobs. His brother last year graduated from the University of City of London, a 4-year course in 3 years as a philosopher. And the last 2 years of the school, he studied in Latin, which was the language spoken by the ancient philosophers. And when he graduated on the dean's list, got an A+ on his dissertation, and was awarded a 2 years master's program scholarship at Oxford. So he just started Oxford University. So I guess that other guy, the other father, knew something that I didn't know, and it happens to be right. It turned out he was right. And then I have a 17-year-old granddaughter. We don't know what she's going to do, but the 2 boys are absolutely outstanding.
But neither one of them would be here if both their grandfathers hadn't survived World War II.
That's true. That's true. It's an incredible life. I met here in San Diego at the Spirit of 45 Day celebration. It'll be 1 year tomorrow. It was on a Sunday. Hope, whose grandfather was Bob Hope, who was the hero of every GI in World War II and beyond. And she came here tonight to sing happy birthday to me. And she's become a friend in 1 year. And look at her. Look at that face. So, yeah, I'm delighted. This has been quite a night.
Yeah, Miranda Hope, Bob's granddaughter, singing happy birthday. That was a big highlight. I can tell she's a pretty big fan of yours too, Jerry. And there were some other people here who hold special meaning for you because of a World War II connection.
I met, for the first time, a member of Phil Schlomberg's family. Phil Schlomberg was my wingman who was killed on August 14th, 1945 on the last mission flown over World War II.
And you guys were P-51s, and he was a good friend of yours and was flying on your wing, but he had somewhat of a premonition about that mission, didn't he?
Phil Schlomberg, we were briefing on August 13th, and somebody asked, why are we going there? They dropped 2 bombs, the war's over. And Jim Tapp, who passed away January 30th, was our then CO, and he said, we have to keep him honest. And Schlomberg leaned over and he said, Captain, if we go, I'm not coming back. And I looked at him and said, what are you talking about? He says, it's a feeling I have. So I told Tapp that story, and he said the only person to get him off is Doc Lewis, if Schlomberg agrees to go see him. And he didn't want to see him. He says, I'll go. On the morning of the 14th, I said, just stick on my wing. They're going to broadcast the code word Ohio before we ever get to the target. Nobody heard the code word. We got to where we have to drop our exterior tanks. We dropped the tanks. We went in and strafed airfields around Tokyo. We were getting shot at, I know, you could see the tracers, but when somebody had only 90 gallons of gas left, we needed 90 gallons to get back to Iwo Jima. They called in 90 gallons, and I'm leading a flight of four, and leading my flight of four through some clouds towards the B-29 that's gonna navigate us back to Iwo Jima. When I came out of the clouds, Schlomberger was gone. There was no radio contact, no visible contact, and he was the last guy killed in World War II. While we were strafing Japan, they declared the war over, and it was 3 hours before we got back. So he was really the last man killed on a mission of hostility towards the Japanese on August 14th, 1945.
And you met members of his family for the first time here tonight?
I met the children of this lady, but this lady's father was Phil Schlomberg's brother. So she heard from her father every day after the war about what a young man he was. He graduated, Phil Schlumberg graduated from university at the age of 16 and entered the Air Corps at the age on his 18th, and he took the IQ test, and his IQ test was score was the highest ever scored of any of the 16 million of us that entered World War II. He was bright and brilliant and a good pilot, and he knew he was going to die, refused not to go, and went and was killed.
And you talk about the 16 million. He's one of the more than 405,000 who didn't come home, and it sounds like there are lots of days where you've thought about that and thought about the fortune you had in being able to come home and here celebrating your 90th birthday.
It's been a wonderful life. I met and married a young woman on October 22nd, 1945. We met on a blind date. We were married 64 years this past October. She's not here, unfortunately, tonight. We moved into an assisted living facility in December. She's frail and she has dementia and she's sort of losing it. But we'll stay together until it's all over for one of us. And that's the commitment that our generation had about most everything. We made a commitment, we stuck to that commitment, and we have to do it again. And the young people of this country don't know about that, and they should know. So that's the spirit of 45, to educate the young people through the Air Force Association Cyber Patriot Program, through reaching out to school children and taking them to the battlefields, letting them look up one of the 405,000, picking a name, and then investigating who that guy was, what he was like, what school did he go, and then saying a eulogy for him or writing a eulogy or making a videotape. We have to educate the young people about commitment and about following through.
Very well said, sir. I haven't read any of your books. I know you've been pretty prolific in writing them, but I see the Distinguished Flying Cross on your uniform. Is this the original uniform that you fit into here, or you borrow this one?
The original uniform, it is exact copy. It's not a copy. It's the original manufacturer. When I came home from Japan in October of 1945, I gave everything that I owned about the war to the neighborhood kids. I kept nothing. I didn't want to be reminded of where I was and what I had done. But now, this is the original uniform, and I'm proud to wear it. I'm proud to be an American, and I just hope that we can live in harmony with all the rest of the people in the world. We're at the point in life where we have the weapons that can destroy everybody, but really, the iPhone is what's going to destroy the people. The iPhone and the internet, and you don't have to go to war anybody to shut down the economy of any country that you want anywhere. And we need young, intelligent, well-educated science, mathematicians, physicists, and those in order to prevent anybody from shutting us down.
You know, I saw that DFC and was going to ask you about how you earned it.
Well, I think I earned it just for showing up and doing the things you were told to do. There were some missions. You did a little more than something else. I shot down four Japanese airplanes, and I guess they gave it to me because that's what they did. Same thing with the Air Medal. You flew a certain amount of missions, you got the Air Medal, which I got with three or four clusters. But it was important, I guess, to recognize what we did. And I wasn't alone. I was just one of 16 million people that served this country. And that was 10% of the population. The other 90% served as well. Rosie the Riveters, the people gave up rationing, all everything. We were at war because we had an enemy. We've been at war now for 23 cumulative years in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we still don't know who the enemy is and who the friend is. And we have to stop that. We have to stop war.
Well, you mentioned there that you shot down four enemy airplanes. Five would have made you an ace. Were there some unconfirmed that you wish would have been confirmed, or is that something that doesn't matter to you?
It never mattered to me. Having a title never mattered to me. I never thought about it. I didn't know a thing about aces until after the war. Didn't know about that.
The Schlumberg story obviously hits home for you, how close you came, how it could have been you, but is there a moment in combat where you really thought, this is it for me?
You know, I never thought I was going to die, and I think that gave me the freedom to fly as a free spirit. And I just hoped that I would never lead my squadron or whoever was flying with me into a place that he couldn't get out. I had three wingmen killed. Phil was the last one. The first one was a guy from New Jersey, And he was following me down eight ships. I was a leader. He was behind me, strafing Chichijima. And Dick Schroeppel was hit, bailed out, got into a life raft, and was killed by mortar fire. And then on May 30th, I shot down an airplane. My wingman was Danny Mathis. I had a toothache. I was supposed to lead a flight to Osaka on June 1. He took my place in my airplane. And an hour out of Tokyo, an hour out of Iwo Jima, they were led into a storm. And on June 1, 27 fighter planes went down in a mid-air collision. And two guys from the 78th, my squadron, Danny Mathis and Jack Nilsson, were killed. 23 other guys were killed. Two guys parachuted and lived. And General Hap Arnold came all the way from Washington to investigate it. 27 fighter planes going down due to weather was a huge, huge loss. Huge. And I knew I was going to live. And after the war, I didn't know why I lived. And I know why I'm alive now. I have a mission. And I have a purity purpose. That mission is to do the things with the young people before I leave.
Well, thank you for doing that. And thank you for serving. Is there anything else that you want people to know?
No. I just like them to have a happy, happy life, have a purity purpose for their life, similar to what I have. And I'm going to keep coming until my time runs out. And if I keep busy, I'll never miss it.
Sounds like a plan. That is Jerry Yellen, 90 years old. Just a portion of his story. He's written a couple of books, one called Of War and Weddings, A Legacy of Two Fathers, published in English and Japanese. I bet you can guess what that's about. More recently, he wrote The Blackened Canteen, and he has a couple more, too. They're all available on Amazon.com, or you can visit his website, jerryyellen.com. I have a few photos up on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. That interview was recorded on Jerry's 90th birthday. Pretty impressive gentleman, huh? We meet a lot of them here on Hometown Heroes, don't we? And one thing that I've made certain to do since starting this program all those years ago is to make sure each veteran receives, free of charge, as many copies as he'd like of the program so his family can have it to hold on to. Many have wanted to pay over the years, and my response is probably the same as yours would be. I say you paid for a lot more than a few CDs through your service in World War II. It's the least that we can do, and I know you feel the same way I do. EECU feels that way too, and EECU's sponsorship of Hometown Heroes allows me to keep producing and providing those copies of the program to all the veterans. So thanks, EECU, and thank you for listening today. Join us again next time on Hometown Heroes when we try to remind you again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.